Welcome to the Celtic Geek, the town crier for both kinds of entertainment, Celtic and geek. My name is Mark Gunn, and I am here with Jeff Murray, artist extraordinaire of the A Long Expected Party. So, Jeff, tell me about yourself. What do you do? And this is a non-visual media, so how's this going to work? You have to explain your art in very visual terms.
Well, this is rather similar to when I've been at Dragon Con and the projector didn't work. And you wonder whether you're going to do shadow puppets or what. What do I do? I work in graphite and oils. I paint Middle Earth. I paint Narnia. I paint a lot of fairy tale images. I've exhibited in Canada. I've had my work exhibited in Canada, the Netherlands, the UK, the United States. Ted Naismith's a good friend of mine, and we've exhibited together. So I've been very, very blessed and fortunate to be able to meet a lot of neat people and paint a lot of neat things.
How long have you been doing this?
That's
a good question. How long have you been doing art?
I've been sketching since I was a kid.
Right.
I've started doing painting, started taking some professional painting courses back in the 80s. But I've only been doing it really honestly, professionally for maybe 15 years or so.
Oh, wow.
So around the year 2000, Lorraine and I both kind of stepped back from high-pressure careers, and she became a writer and I became a painter.
Nice.
So
do y'all work together?
We actually do. She writes columns for the Georgia Bulletin, which is a Catholic newspaper, and her columns are on... They deal with values, religious themes, questions of life, issues that we all find ourselves dealing with, and she asked them, would you like some illustrations for these things? And they said, sure, you know of an illustrator. I said, oh yeah, I happen to be married to one. So,
convenient.
So, yeah. So that's actually helped me a lot because I've had to really. Her columns run the gamut, and so my usual medium is fantasy. I'm used to dragons and wild landscapes and things like that. But now I find myself having to paint saints,
right,
or images of children with parents, and
uh-huh,
more homey scenes.
Uh-huh.
Mothers bandaging their daughters' knees and things like this. So it's forced me to do things that I wouldn't ordinarily do.
Yeah,
and it's a
that's
good
cool. That's a nice thing. Yeah. Now, how'd you get into the fantasy art, and for that matter, how'd you get into Tolkien?
We had read to us The Hobbit when I was in second grade. But we weren't allowed to read The Lord of the Rings because it was too old for us in second grade. And so I discovered it in high school and loved it, but didn't really kind of come back to it because the painting and sketching that I was doing at the time was kind of sneaking around the edges. I was actually trained as an engineer rather than an artist. So I came back to Tolkien when I finally got serious about painting, just because the material that Tolkien presented was material I really wanted to explore. I love Tolkien, I love C.S. Lewis, I love G.K. Chesterton. All of these writers deal with, I love Flannery O'Connor, all of these writers deal with issues of goodness, truth, and beauty.
Hmm.
They deal with real life issues, but they deal with them in mythological ways.
Huh.
So they're dealing, the thing I love about all of those writers is they deal with real stuff. It's not just, people think fantasy, they think, oh, that's kid stuff.
Right.
But in all the cases of these writers, what they use is they use myth to convey deeper truths, deeper understandings about what it is to be a human being, what it is to live, what it is to love, what it is to...
Just sort of what myths have always been, too,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. myths are knowledge distilled into a more palatable form. And C.S. Lewis used to talk about his tales, particularly the Narnia tales. The reason he thought they were so important was because they got truths across to people in a way that got past their quote-unquote watchful dragons. That, uh-huh, so many of us where as soon as we get the sense that somebody is trying to teach us something, we start, just tell me a story.
Right.
And you say, okay, then I'll tell you a story. Yeah. And then we're all ears. I worked at the Carlos Museum at Emory University as a docent for a while. And what I learned was when you have this big gaggle of kids and you're taking them around a museum and they're starting to get unruly and they're starting not to pay attention, all you have to do to get their attention is to say, "Once upon a time," and everybody gets quiet.
Oh, interesting.
Huh. So we all love stories.
That's true.
And frankly, I've been given a couple of drawing classes while I'm here. Just got done with one, and one of the things I mention about art, two things I mention about art is, first off, good art is about storytelling. A good piece of art tells a story. It's not a depiction of something so much as it is a story.
It's not a capture of time.
It's not a capture of time. There is straight illustration, but usually you're illustrating someone else's story, and a good illustrator will illustrate that well.
Right.
But even if you don't know the story behind the illustration, a good piece of art will stand by itself. A person can walk up to it knowing nothing about Tolkien, and they can look at this painting, and I can say, "Tell me what this painting is about," and I will get fantastic tales from them about what the paintings are about. In fact, one of the joys of being an artist is actually having someone else explain one of my paintings to me.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And it's fantastic because they will. There's something about creativity. You know this about being, you know, with music. There's something about creativity where sometimes you go places where you didn't expect to get there.
Yeah.
Particularly with songwriting, you'll end up in, where did this come from? Well, I think it comes from above. But
right.
But when you're in the flow, things will get into your work that you don't necessarily know they're there because you're too close to it.
Yeah.
And sometimes having another person look at your work and say, "Oh, I love the way you use the light and darkness here. You know, I can see that that Arwen is standing next to this bridge, and on the other side of the bridge is darkness. On her side of the bridge is this light, and that's where she's going to have to be going, and she's going to have to travel in this dark path." And I'm going, "This is great. I need a notebook." This is
I was about
wonderful.
To ask. So yeah. That was my next question that I had to ask. I was like, "So do you use other people's stories to describe your art?"
Well,
I know when some things I've learned about artists. A lot of artists, they write a little story to go along with it because the story also helps to explain the art.
Yeah.
But do you create your own, or do you just sit back and wait until it, and then say, "I'm writing that down"?
Both. The other part of art is, the first part is story. It's all about storytelling. The second part is all's fair in art and love, in love and art.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So anything you need to do to capture in your work what you want to say,
uh-huh,
is fair game.
Yeah.
So we talk about in the drawing classes that I give. People say, you know, if you go to a standard art teacher, they say you can't use this tool, or you can't trace, or you can't do this,
right,
or you can't do
yeah.
that. Say, no, everything's fair,
yeah,
as long as it's going to help you get where you need to go.
Yeah.
But no, in terms of storytelling and stories, it's. The neat part is that an observant person, somebody, a second pair of eyes looking at your work is worth their weight in mithril.
Right.
Okay? Because they're going to see things in your work that you haven't seen, particularly if you're in the process of working on something and you're not sure about something. Having another person look at it can be enormously helpful. But often someone will point out an aspect of a painting I've done that is clearly in the painting,
right,
but it was not consciously put
right.
there by me. So it was put there from my perspective by the person who was doing the painting, of whose instrument I was just.
Right.
Okay. Is that a
I follow you.
Okay, anyway.
That's the important thing.
Okay, fair enough.
That's awesome. Okay. So now, I've been looking at I was listening to a podcast actually on the way down here, and they're talking about, in particular, they're talking about children's illustrations, and you mentioned something a moment ago where you were talking about it telling a story, and one of the things that they were talking about in these illustrations is that each illustration for like children's stories, they should be basically should guide you to the next page, you know, mm-hmm. visually guide you to the next page. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as your art, do you create, continue with stories when you're creating? I mean, do you guide people along an artistic journey?
Well, that's kind of I do if I'm illustrating a book, yes, okay. because I know where I'm going. And I know I'm going to be doing a particular series. There's a book that's going to be coming out later this year that I did that's a very much a sci-fi book. And involves some very intriguing characters, some of whom are human, some of whom are alien. And you have to, first off, if you're telling a story in a series of pictures, you have to maintain consistency of the look, right. the feel of the character, their stance even.
Yeah.
So that's when it's helpful to have a model or models.
So do you work a lot with models for your art?
Or you
just do it for those specific instances?
Well, I use models if I find I can't come up with references that will work. I don't tend to do series of okay. works where I need the same person over and over again.
Right.
But I'll try anything. Some of the people that we know here at Allop have become models for me indirectly yes. because there's so many pictures of them.
Right.
JP, dressing as Gandalf, has ended up in probably a half a dozen of my paintings. Because to me, he is Gandalf. He is the perfect Gandalf in my mind's eye.
Yeah.
More so even than Ian McKellen. So you have certain people that if you can get enough pictures of them, they make wonderful references.
Yeah.
It's not you're exactly duplicating them.
Right.
But you're trying to capture their very natural stance or the way the gestures that they use. Now, the cheapest model that I can get hold of is myself.
Right, right.
So I paint myself into a lot of my paintings, hopefully unrecognizably so.
Right.
because I don't paint myself as I am exactly, but I will often take many, many pictures of myself in different stances so I can get the right pose or the right expression. And then I change myself into when I'm actually doing the painting or the reference sketches based on the photographs, I'll change myself into an elf, or I'll change myself into a dwarf, or I'll change myself into a hobbit, or whatever, or
yeah.
into Gollum even.
Yeah.
So I do use models, and in general, when people come to me asking about art in general, the first thing I say is your most important tool is your eyes.
Right.
Because most of us don't see what we think we see.
Yeah.
And when you're going to do good artwork, I mean, doing something really worthwhile, you really have to understand the shape of a tree's limbs. You have to understand the shape of the leaves. You have to understand how light interplays through the leaves. You have to understand
how
light reflects off of. Well, but we can all see it. One of the exercises that I often do is to have a class look to put someone's hand in sunlight
mm-hmm.
and ask them what color is their hand.
Hmm.
And if you put your hand in sunlight, what you'll find is where the sun is striking it, you see bright golds, and
right.
they'll fade into pinks and maybe into kind of a deep crimson. And in the shadow, you'll see blues and purples even.
Right.
Those colors are really there.
Yeah.
But unless you learn to see them there and recognize that they're there, you can't reproduce them,
yeah.
so you can't paint them properly.
Huh.
So a lot of it is about seeing.
I've done some little bit of sketches, and when I've actually copied something, when I'm copying a specific thing, that's when I actually can do a pretty good job of doing it. When I'm trying to come up something off the top of my head, it's terrible. But when it comes to colorizing it, it's even worse. I feel like I have no ability to turn a black and white picture into something colorful and pretty.
Right. Well, that gets into color theory issues and things like that. Cartoons and sometimes when they're the caricature of an artist, you have him standing with his paintbrush in front of him, kind of eyeballing his subject with the paintbrush, and everybody thinks, well, what he's trying to do is he's trying to see what the proportions are, and in fact, that's not true. What he's typically doing is he's comparing the color on the tip of his paintbrush to the color of his subject. to see if he got it right. But that's what you do. You're literally trying to see, am I getting the right colors when I'm mixing the colors? Am I getting the colors properly? Mm-hmm. It's tougher than it seems.
Yeah.
And that's why I personally love working in oils, because oils never, well, for all practical purposes, never dry. Mm-hmm. They take forever to dry. So you can mix and mix and mix until you get exactly the hue you want, exactly the shade you want, and then you can work with that, and it's not going to dry up on you. That's why I personally hate watercolors and acrylics and gouache. Most fantasy artists love those. That's their preferred medium.
Uh-huh.
I can't stand
them.
John Howe notably can't stand oils.
Right.
So as an artist, you have to kind of find what medium you love the best.
Yeah.
And it's a case of what medium speaks to you. You're a musician. What instrument spoke to you?
Yeah.
What instrument allows you to express yourself the way you want to be expressed?
Yep.
In your case,
the auto harp. Yeah.
In my case, if I'm playing an instrument, and it's not my main thing, but if I'm going to do it, I do keyboards.
Yeah.
I'm happier with them. I've never been happier as happy with strummed instruments.
Yeah.
But everyone finds you find a resonance. As an artist, you find a resonance with the tools that you want to use, and they feed back, and you get better and better. And you realize this, you form a relationship with the tools that you use.
Years ago, I drew actually a dragon, and I don't know what I was copying, because I must have been, but it came off beautiful. And it still looked pretty when my friend colorized it, but it lost something to me, because I was like, I can't get out of the black and white aspect.
Well, color's very different, and the thing is, I work in graphite and I work in oils.
Uh-huh.
Some people far prefer my graphite sketches to my oil paintings.
Yeah.
You can do different things in one medium that you cannot do in the other. I mean, you obviously can't do color in graphite. I mean, you can use colored pencils, but that's that's different from straight graphite. But with graphite, you can get what I love about graphite is it gives you this wonderful 19th century sketchbook feel. If you go back and look at sketchbooks of some of the explorers that went to Egypt and were sketching the Sphinx and the pyramids and everything, they always had their sketchbooks, and they were always these graphite sketches, and they're these just marvelous. There's this depth that you're able to get with graphite. You're just talking, shades of gray.
Right.
But you get this timelessness to it that sometimes is much tougher to get with color.
Yeah.
A lot of people who love art will start with drawing, and then they'll say, okay, now I'd like to learn how to paint.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very different, because with drawing, it's all about form and, to a certain extent, shading. But it's all about line, form, shading. With color, it's about color.
Yeah.
Okay? It's not so much about form. Huh. It's about splotches of color.
This is just a random thought that came to mind as you were talking about that. So could you think about I was thinking about, like, movies. You know how, like, people make these movies that have great stories.
Mm-hmm.
And then every summer, out comes the blockbusters, which may or may not have a great story associated. And usually that's, a lot of times people, ridicule those
mm-hmm.
because they lacked substance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess it doesn't quite work here, but my mind went to the idea of sort of like, okay, you have this solid base of drawings and such, and then it can be turned into something even greater with color,
mm-hmm.
but, in my case, probably not, or maybe, you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense at all?
Yeah, and see, the thing is, sometimes you can go there and it won't work, and sometimes you can go there and it's much better even than you'd hoped it would be.
Yeah, true.
I have one painting
like that.
It just depends. It just depends. Another one of the reasons that I love working with oil paints, and although I do a lot more planning now before I sit down to actually paint, and I don't do as much experimenting while I'm painting. When I was first painting, I would often not exactly know where I was going as I'm painting,
mm-hmm.
and so there's a certain level where you realize this is not working. It's just not working. What's fascinating about oil painting is, I've more than one occasion I've said, okay, to heck with this. The nice thing about oil painting is it doesn't dry quickly. Mm-hmm. So you can take a rag and you can go and just wipe it all off and start from scratch.
Wow.
Interestingly enough, there had been more than one time when I went to wipe it away, and as I wiping it away, whatever the problem was fixed.
Really?
In other words, in the blurring of one section of it, it helped me to figure out what was wrong.
Wow.
And in some cases, just the beginning, just the first swish across loosened up the painting to the point that it's
nice.
Like, okay.
And then
I can just, with a little bit of extra, I could now manipulate it to where it needed to be. But that's serendipity. That's the hand of somebody bigger maybe interfering and saying, you stupid, slapping you across the face. And suddenly, something wonderful happens. In jamming and music, the same sort of thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'll be going along and all of a sudden a riff will come out of nowhere, and particularly if you're playing with other people that are that really, really can go off in wild directions, you can end up with some fantastic stuff just out of thin air, seemingly.
Yeah. So what is your, do you have a favorite piece that you've ever done? I know that's which is your favorite child question. I'm a lot more limited. I have like two pieces, That would have been my favorite if I didn't rip out the nose.
I'll tell you that when I first started painting, or first was starting to take it very seriously, I call him my adopted brother. He became part of our family when we were very young. He's not formally an adopted brother, but he's a painter. His work's in the Metropolitan. He's over in London now. He paints full-time for a living. And when I first started painting seriously, I asked him, should I be specifically trying to hone a style and kind of focus on that style? He said, no. That stuff happens naturally. And he said, and it's going to change. However you paint now is going to be different however you're going to paint 5 years from now is going to be different from how you paint now.
Right.
And he said, the thing you need to pay attention to is if you don't change.
Right.
Because if you don't change, you're not learning.
Right.
You're not learning new things. You're not experimenting. You're not giving yourself the permission to screw up and learn from the screw-ups. So what's my favorite painting? If I'm doing what I ought to be doing, it should be a fairly recent painting.
Right.
So I'm much happier with my more recent paintings than my earlier ones. Not that some of the earlier ones I don't like, but you're a different person now than you were when you painted something earlier. You're a different person now than the person who wrote maybe one of your first songs.
Yeah.
And if you're like me, you might go back to that first song and say, if I were to write it now, I might change a few things. I might mix it up a little bit more. It shows you've grown.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah,
that's always a good thing.
Yeah. Well, you've been here at ALEP, a long expected party, every time, all three times.
So have you.
I know. We've been here for a long time. What is this? This 6 year? Where did I lose track?
Six years since the first one.
So, how has it treated you? What has been your favorite thing since you've been here? What?
Oh gosh, this.
What is your best memory? How about that?
My best memory. But probably my coolest non-person memory was the very first ALEP we were here. Lorraine and I were staying in the West Family Lot, which is way isolated. It's way on the other side. It's like a mile and a half from the main village. And you're in this wash house upstairs, and it's a little spooky.
Yeah.
And there's nothing around you. And we were out there by ourselves. And we had to drive in every morning coming back, and we're driving and we saw a lot of wildlife as we're driving back and forth. But one time when we're getting ready to come in, I'm sitting in the car. We have both of the doors open. I'm sitting in the car. Lorraine is outside, I think taking a photograph or something, and a sparrow comes and lands on the steering wheel, like a foot in front of my face. I'm going, this really is an isolated place. This bird doesn't even know what a car is.
Welcome to the Hobbit Village.
Welcome to the Shire. But there were so many wonderful things with people. I mean, the You've probably, I don't know if you've talked about this event extensively general, but
I tell people all the time, every chance I get.
There's nothing like this because it's like no convention you've ever been to, because it's not so much a convention as you literally coming to the Shire.
And it's not a Renaissance festival. It's where it's still an imagination sort of thing. You're coming to the Shire.
You're coming to the Shire. There are rolling hills and stone wall fences, and you're going to breakfast in the morning, and people are dressed as elves and wizards, and there's a magic that happens here. The very first Alep 6 years ago was the Great Recession was just beginning. Mm-hmm. The world was just about literally collapsing around our ears when we all came here. It was the best thing we could have possibly done because it allowed us to kind of center and realize, you know, there is goodness, there is hope, there are wonderful people, there are wonderful things. You know, God will always send you good things when you need them.
Yeah.
And in that case, I think we all need that.
Yeah.
So Alep's just a tremendous blessing on everybody that comes here.
Where can people find you online? This interview went way longer. I was
okay.
I normally keep it about 15 minutes, but I was having so much fun talking. Okay. I was like, oh, let's just keep going.
Yep.
Where can people find you online?
www.jeffmurray.com, J-E-F with one F, J-E-F-M-U-R-R-A-Y.com is my website. You can also find me on Facebook. Just look up Jeff Murray. I'm the only Jeff Murray out there with one F, so
right.
I'm easy to find on Facebook. Those are the easiest places. But
excellent. Well, thank you so much, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your weekend. I know I am.
I'm sure we both will.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sláinte.